Tuesday, March 6th, 2007, and today we have a public hearing on House Bill 5044, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And so I guess I'm opening the hearing, public hearing on House Bill 5044. And before we hear, call up some people to discuss the Student Assistance Commission from the Commission's perspective, I'm going to turn it over to Legislative Fiscal Analyst Steve Bender, who's going to talk about some of the literature that we have sitting in front of us on the committee dais.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to just point out some of the items that you have before you today. You probably brought with you an item that was distributed to your offices last week, a three-ring binder with the Ways and Means presentation for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. That is the material that we will be going through, or the agency will be going through this afternoon. But additionally, you will find here before you the governor's recommended budget binder. This is similar to the binders that you've been getting for the health-related licensing boards. This is a binder that has standard information for each agency, and we ask you to bring this back with you this evening and bring both binders with you again tomorrow. Late afternoon.
Okay, we're not reading it yet.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
No.
You confused me. Thank you.
Sorry.
I got a work group at 4:30, so thank you, Mr. Bender.
I also have distributed a couple of items that I prepared as an introduction to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. You will be hearing this budget for the remainder of this week with agency presentations today, tomorrow, and Thursday, and then next Monday will be public testimony day for Oregon Student Assistance Commission. But please look and see this particular item, set of handouts that I've given you. I'd like to just cover briefly to give you some background and grounding in this agency before you get into the details from the agency itself. If you look at this chart, the first page shows a history since 1999-01, which was the biennium before the recession, the last biennium before the recent recession. You can see a history of funding for OSAC and for revenues of the state in general. The black line there shows historically the amount of state general funds and lottery funds in inflation-adjusted dollars compared to the amount that the state had available before the last recession. So as you can see, this black line we've seen before on other charts that I've distributed. The current biennium, 05-07, we're at 100.8, which means that basically adjusted for inflation, we have the same amount of general fund and lottery funds as we did before the recession. Then you can see the essential budget level and the governor's recommended budget level of funding and how that compares. So you can see it increases 15.7% over 99-01 if you were to approve the governor's budget. The red line, which you haven't seen before, shows the same funding history for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And as you can see here, two things to note. The first is, if you look at the current biennium, 05-07, funding has been increased by 75% over prior recessionary levels, even adjusting for inflation. And what's most notable about this, in addition to the extent of this increase, is the fact that all other post-secondary education budgets would be below the black line. That's to say the state took money proportionally away, and sometimes in absolute amounts, away from post-secondary education to help fund other things. But that was not what the state did for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. What the legislature has done historically is, as it has relied on higher tuition levels to keep post-secondary education solvent in the recession, you've also, in the past, added to student support to help the lowest income students pay those higher tuition dollars. So there was an increase there to 173.7, and the governor's proposing another large increase. If you look at the next page, which is a bar chart, This shows the state support in dollar terms instead of this normalized number adjusted for inflation. These are actual dollar terms. State support, again, is general fund and lottery fund. And you can see that the blue, both the dark blue and the lighter blue, represents funding for the opportunity grant. Almost all of state support for this budget goes for the opportunity grant, which is transferred to lower income students in the form of student aid. It is only that red portion that is state support for everything else that the commission does. It's a small amount, but actually it's growing. If you compare 05-07 with the governor's recommended budget, it's still small as a total, but it's a very large percentage increase. The next chart looks at the opportunity grant, which is the primary recipient of state support. This is a little hard to read. I don't think I labeled this as well as I could have. The important thing to look at, though, is the blue bars show what was projected during legislative sessions as to what the expenditures in this program would be. So, if most notably, if you look at 2005-06 and 2006-07, these are the 2 years of the current biennium. And you can see that actual opportunity grant expenditures are far below what the legislature budgeted for, by a total of almost $18 million less than what was budgeted for, because utilization of the program has turned out to be far below what had been projected last session and what had been funded last session. The two blue bars for 07-08 and 08-09 show the projected opportunity grant expenditures under the governor's recommended budget. And you can see the very large increase in 08-09 is, as you are probably aware, the implementation of an expansion of the opportunity grant, which is being called the shared responsibility model. This is an opportunity grant expansion that will significantly expand the program and its services to students. The next bar graph that looks like this looks at the governor's budget only implements the shared responsibility model during the second year of the biennium. It's a phase-in. That is the 2008-09 academic year. If you look at that chart there, that shows what the how many students are projected to get opportunity grants if the shared responsibility model is adopted. And it breaks down to look at the composition of these students. The number 26,060 on the lower right, dark blue, those are the number of students who are getting opportunity grants this year and before the adoption of the shared responsibility model. So what would essentially happen is, under the new model, all of the existing program recipients are still eligible. They would generally get more, or they would almost always get higher grants than they do under the existing program. The light blue number on top of that, 13,218, is the estimate of the number of students who don't currently get opportunity grants, but who are already enrolled or would be enrolled in that year, 2008-09. So this is an expansion of the awards to students with higher income levels than the current program allows. And then finally, the salmon colored on the top, 2769, that represents new students who would come into the system and enroll in community colleges or private or public four-year undergraduate programs in Oregon. So this is an expansion, an access of getting additional students in. We don't know exactly how many of these students would be students who wouldn't have gone to school otherwise, because some of them would have been people who would have gone out of state but are now coming in-state in lieu. So you can see, though, that the program does expand or is projected to expand enrollment somewhat, but not really a great deal. It's primarily providing more funds to students who would enroll otherwise. And finally, the last page has a diagram, has a chart, or a table, I should say, that shows a comparison of the governor's recommended funding from state support compared to what was approved in 07, in 05-07. You can see the opportunity grant is expanded by 42%. Our rural health services program, which you'll be hearing about, is more than doubled. It's expanded by 138%. The nursing services program is just basically adjusted for inflation. The Oregon Troops to Teachers program is eliminated. The Aspire program, which you'll be hearing about, receives state support for the first time. The student child care program is not really a new program. It's just new to the agency. It's being transferred from DHS. And the agency operations are expanded very significantly. They're more than doubled in this budget. And finally, the last item I wanted to mention before the agency starts is on this tan-colored sheet. This, again, is the LFO review of the agency's compliance with the budget notes that were adopted in the 2005 session. And in the interest of time, I will not go into details, except to say that we find that they've complied with all the requirements that the 2005 session laid out in the form of budget notes. These generally involved on the expansion of how to implement the expansion of the program that was approved last session.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You may have covered this before I came in the door, although I doubt it given the order of things. Did you talk about the reason for the underutilization of the program? You noted that there was an underutilization.
There is, Representative Barnhart, primarily, I would characterize the reason for the underutilization as being more after the fact. It turned out that the forecasting method wasn't working very well. It wasn't that good. In essence, we believed that only 70% of the people who were eligible for opportunity grants were actually able to be awarded them before the money had run out. And now that we have a situation, and the agency will be able to talk to this from their retrospect, now that we have a situation where we're not limiting enrollment, which is to say there's not a time deadline, a calendar deadline, we haven't had the expansion that we would have expected if we were really moving from 70% to 100%. It's been a much smaller expansion, which I think retroactively would lead me to believe that we're really probably been serving more than 70% in the past. Other things, though, that have happened is that the enrollments are lower than projected, especially in community colleges. They've been declining. And one thing that you may hear...
That's overall enrollment, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
And another thing you may hear is that, well, there was a timing issue in that the program students didn't know and financial aid offices didn't know that the award would be available without restrictions to full-time students the first year until after the awards have been generally awarded. However, it turns out that for full-time students, it appears there will be even fewer awards the second year of the biennium, where it was clear that everyone knew that this expansion had occurred, than there had been the first year. So that does not seem to be an adequate explanation to me. I think part of it's unexplained, and part of it, I think, was due to the fact that now, after the fact, we probably were not accurate in thinking that only 70% of the eligibles had been served in the prior regime.
Well, could I do a quick follow-up comment, really? There's another possibility, and that is the one that's related to your comment about overall enrollment, and that is that our failure to adequately fund the program in the community colleges and at the university system, thus artificially reducing the number of students in those programs, may also be a reason why this program wasn't fully utilized. That may suggest a problem with correct allocation of our funds that we weren't aware of 2 years ago.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Senator Devlin.
We've talked about this extensively before, but Mr. Bender brought up the things regarding how late we made this decision in session, how late it was in the process, and I think that explains to some degree the lack of utilization in the first year. It doesn't necessarily explain the lack of utilization in the second year. I would hope that when the parties come up here from the Student Assistance Commission, they might actually sort of refresh all of our memories, since it's been for most of us a lot of years since we were in this situation. But you also have the circumstance, too, that in the application process for financial aid, just because you became aware late that an opportunity grant might be available to you doesn't necessarily mean that the other items of financial aid would be available to you afterwards, and you may have never made the initial application. The other thing that's there, though, I think in this, and kind of think of it to be frank about it, is that while we increased the availability of the grants to students, we in no way increased the amount. And while we know that tuition was held to a fairly reasonable level of increase at the university level, there were pretty dramatic increases at some community colleges still. And so, although we made it available to more students, in a very real sense, it became less affordable still, because we weren't providing anything in addition to the 11%. So I just wanted to put that on the record, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Morgan.
Well, this is not going to happen very often, Mr. Chair, but I do agree with almost everything that Senator Devlin just said.
Notice she is the
almost
a qualifier there.
But I think that when we get into this, we're going to find out that there is a large dynamic of factors that figured into it. And I think the one that hasn't been thrown on the list so far is the fact that the economy has significantly strengthened and people are going out into the job market. And so they're not going to school, and that has some role to play in what's happening here, too. But I think that this is not the first time we've expanded a program and found out that it didn't unfold the way that we thought. But I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to listen to the things that the commission's learned from this and work towards a process to make this work better in the future.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In relationship to the comments that have just been made,
Senator Devlin.
Yeah, he agrees fully with me.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Came privy to some information just this last week that the perception that education is a recession industry, which has held for a major part of the 20th century, that no longer seems to be necessarily holding. That particular equation is not holding up, and so I'm not real sure how to interpret any of the information. And I'm sorry I haven't yet had the opportunity to read the studies, to listen to a synopsis of them from the community college president when I was having conversations with him, the community college president from Pendleton. I forget that there are a couple of other community colleges in the state, but they probably don't matter anyway. And I would be kind of interested if LFO staff or anyone in the community here has any information on it, could shed light on what we do and what we want to do in relationship to this and other of the education budget. So it's a request, and it just saved me work if I can get somebody else to do it.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While I usually do agree with most of what Senator Devlin says, I disagree with one of the points he made just a moment ago. With the huge increase in tuition over the last decade or so, and the huge disinvestment in higher education, including community colleges during that same period of time, I don't believe that any increase in tuition is reasonable. We've got to get a balance back in what Oregonians can afford to pay for tuition, and we have to increase the support for community colleges and the university system. At the point we do that, we will have increased the capacity of students to take classes. From their own financial point of view, would probably reduce the problem that we have here with utilization. I do agree with the other point he made that not increasing the amount of the grant is a problem, but it's a problem because of the increases in tuition that are unreasonable and substantially too high.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative. All right, so we don't have a tabula rasa panel, but we have one that I think is, has a variety of opinions and views and perspectives. So we don't think public hearing means you sit there and listen to what we have to say, so I'd like to now call up Bridget Burns, the chair of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and Dennis Johnson, the executive director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, to provide us with a presentation on HOSA.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dennis Johnson, the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and I'm going to turn this over shortly to the chairperson of our commission. She's someone who has a history with higher education policy issues in this state, starting as a student body president at one of our OUS campuses and moving on to a position on the Board of Higher Education. She was one of the early members of the Access and Affordability Work Group, a group that spanned the higher education sectors in the state and looked at what could we do to address some of the very issues that you made such astute comments on just a few minutes ago. So without further ado, I'd like to have our chairperson talk about the starting point, really, for our budget overview. Now, we have four major components to the agency and a number of policy initiatives this year. And as Mr. Bender pointed out, the governor's recommended budget has been very good to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. We're projecting that we can help many more students if these plans come to fruition. So how to tackle it? We start at the beginning with what the commission is, and we won't go through an overview like you heard from me a while back. But the basic components and the initiatives are broken into sections that match those. So here's our chair, Bridget Burns.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me speak today. As Dennis mentioned, my name is Bridget Burns. I live in Bend and Corvallis and enjoy working on issues affecting low-income students, which brings me here today. I think that we all pretty much share the values that we want to try and help as many people in Oregon as we can. And obviously, I think the Oregon Opportunity Grant and what OSAC is trying to do in the coming biennium is exactly where we need to be focusing our efforts. So to give you a brief overview of the commission, we have four major components that you see on the slide behind me. The most important and most popular and well-known, most people don't even know the OSAC exists. They just know about the OOG. The Oregon Opportunity Grant is our main need-based program, which allows for low-income students to have an opportunity to attend college. And, of course, as most of you know, with the shared responsibility model, we're hoping to expand that to include middle-income Oregonians. Additionally, we have a lot more scholarships that a lot of folks don't know about that leverage private dollars as well, working with foundations such as the Ford Family Foundation here in Oregon to give even more opportunities for low-income students to attend college, as well as high-achieving students, who are sometimes some of the same people. Additionally, the Aspire program, which is a mentorship program that operates within high schools and encourages young folks to go to college and start believing that it's possible to attend college, which is one of our programs that most people see as being extremely effective, especially in some of the rural areas in Oregon. And finally, the Oregon Office of Degree Authorization, which ensures the quality of our degrees and makes sure that everything's by the book. So,
Ms. Burns?
Yes.
Before you continue, in the interest of full disclosure, I just have to let the committee know that this is There's a bit of irony here because I used to direct the speech and debate program at Portland Community College, and when Ms. Burns was a student at Oregon State University, she was one of the star debaters and members of the speech and debate program there, and they used to do quite an effective job, and sometimes we managed to do decently against you, but quite often. But I would be on the other side of the table judging Ms. Burns and doing debates and other speaking events, and then that debate program at PCC was actually eliminated because of budget cuts that happened here in Salem. So there's a lot of levels of irony happening here, but I want to say I'm gratified to see that you're in this position, and I'm certain you are and will continue to be an effective advocate. So just for full disclosure,
please continue. And it was a tremendous tragedy when the PCC program was cut, but also I attribute most of my success to debate training. So now, the policy initiatives that we're going to be talking to you about this week, the first one that most of you have heard about and most of you probably already support, I hope, is the development of the shared responsibility model, which would be a redesign of the Oregon Opportunity Grant, which would increase funding but also expand the number of individuals who are eligible for the program. This is something that you're going to hear a lot about, that you've probably heard a lot about, and it's certainly probably something that we should continue to think about because it's probably the most successful program we'll be able to create this year. And when I was a member of the Access and Affordability Working Group, it was a statewide group of folks from every different sector that came together to come up with what was the possibly the best program we could create for Oregon, and that's really what I believe this result is. The Aspire program, we want to establish in statute and make it so that it's actually a permanent member of Oregon's culture and obtain funding for statewide expansion. Currently, we're above 80 schools. The first year would put us at 115. The second year, we would hope for 150. And that, of course, the way that we would monitor it would be going into not just the number of high schools, the number of students who are participating, as well as their college, how far they go in college, their attendance, etc. So we really see the success of these programs and be able to measure them. And I think that's probably what you all are looking for, is measurable outcomes. Should I go back into the measurement of the OOG expansion?
I think we'll cover it.
Okay. I think we're going to be good. Expanding our scholarship services to accommodate growth, which of course we think, in my opinion, as a private citizen who works on the commission and seeing the amount of work that the commission does for the small number of staff, I think it would be a huge deal if we gave them another staff position because they're desperately in need of it to be able to accommodate the number of people they do. Revise and enhance the Jobs Plus and the Rural Health and Student Child Care programs, all important programs in Oregon, which we think, one of which we're just now getting, but we're going to be adding some positive moves in that direction. Develop and promote emphasis on student consumerism with the ODA, which is of course going to increase protection so that we don't have unnecessary debt burden for students who are attending fictional universities, which we're not a fan of. Improve office operation with technology lifecycle program and internal audit function, which I honestly don't know anything about, but I'm sure it sounds very interesting. They keep me out of the technology realm, so. So those are the first two slides. And then finally, I wanted to touch briefly on our organizational chart. We're a commission of seven, and we come from, I think we have one commissioner in Portland, but Eugene, Roseburg, Grants Pass, Powell Butte, me and Bend, / Corvallis. So I cover two areas. A geographically diverse group. They're all deeply committed to low-income students achieving opportunity to go to college. And Dennis reports to us, as well as the Office of Degree Authorization, Alan Contreras. And then he, of course, oversees the major functions of the commission.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board right now? We will keep on.
Senator Devlin?
I have a very quick question about the Oregon Opportunity Grant. I'm very familiar with the shared responsibility model. One of the things we talked about in the sort of the mid portion of that process for the development of the model was that you try to create something that still allowed students to basically not create a new world of how you apply for financial aid, that you would follow the existing FAFSA process and all of that. Was that all maintained in terms of how you built the budget, in terms of what you think your resources are? And because that was a concern, because at one time I think we thought that people might be going off in an area where you'd have additional things people would have to file and things of that nature. And we were kind of assured that you'd mimic the existing system requirements.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, your hope we can confirm. Your fears we don't have to worry about. The new program, which we will get into at length on Thursday when we focus on the shared responsibility model, that will be the theme of that hearing. But the program builds on the infrastructure that we already have in place, and that is that we received 160,000 FAFSAs, or the free application for federal student aid. We receive those FAFSAs every year. We will continue to have students apply the same way. We will be changing some of the communication that we have. We don't have much communication with students directly, and we'd like to be able to tell them early on what their eligibility is so we can influence their behavior a bit more. But the same mechanism, in fact, we're interested in working with our colleagues, our counterparts in other parts of the country to ease the process. The FAFSA, or this application, is a very long, complicated one. We'd like to see there be available an easier version of that, just as there's a 1040 easy. We'd love to see a FAFSA easy, and that may come to fruition in the coming years. And other than that, you will see us building on the same platform, a new model for determining eligibility, but the same disbursements to the schools, the same electronic communication and fund management that we have now.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Very good. This is...
Thank you.
If we were going to debate these points, Chair Burns would be very good to have here at the table with me, but what I'd like to do is, since you have binders in front of you that do some of this, I would like to share with you kind of what the basic program is that we will be changing. The Oregon Opportunity Grant, just for a brief review here, you've heard about the statistics from Mr. Bender. The information that you have in front of you when you get into the next section shows the opportunity grant rules, eligibility requirements, that kind of thing. It's in your binder. We didn't duplicate that and go on and on, but it's background information that may become very helpful for you on Thursday when we get into the new model. My thinking was where we are now versus where we hope to be taking this program on Thursday. So it does talk about award amounts, income thresholds, the asset test that was implemented a couple of years ago, the processing and awarding timelines. Then some basic statistics, how many students are helped right now, and from Mr. Bender's handout, and these statistics, you see some very impressive growth in the number of students that have been served. We will continue to see growth this year, but though the full-time student component has declined, overall, we'll see more headcount because of the addition of part-time grants for the first time this year. So half-time students, full-time students, more heads, more dispersed, but that disturbing trend of fewer full-time students. And that, in fact, we have a colleague with us here from one of the community colleges, and she passed me a note when Senator Devlin was speaking, saying what she sees on her campus is what they're seeing all over the state. It's a decline in FTE on community college campuses. We're seeing real price resistance to the amount of tuition that is being charged. It's for other states, it would be a four-year college tuition rate, what we charge our community college students. So that's kind of subtext to some of these statistics, but all of the points that I've been hearing are certainly germane, they're certainly relevant here. The inclusion here of a two-page shared responsibility model description is almost redundant, but it's the best capsule, I think. It's in your binder. You can refer to it between now and Thursday. Any questions that arise, we will hope we can address for you on Thursday. I will be joined by governor's staff, and they know this model inside and out. We are all extremely excited about this one. In the binder, then, we go through what you see as an Orbitz budget narrative, one of the state accounting systems, of course. And the first thing here is the Oregon Opportunity Grant Shared Responsibility Model, what we hope to add to our budget. When you see growth in the OSAC budget, it is basically growth to be able to implement this tremendous program for Oregon students. It will take a little bit more than what we have right now. Part of an FTE of one of our IT people, part of an FTE, almost a full FTE of one policy analyst. We need more than that. We need people who can go out and help us train in financial aid offices around the state, help people implement this program, and help get the word out. So it's building infrastructure, but the expansion is one that we've already talked about. So the budget narrative, I think, covers that, and it gets all the way up to then how we measure the success. As Ms. Burns mentioned when she was just briefly covering the opportunity grant, we are already planning how we will measure the success of this new effort. And some of these things we have had to take a bit of time to develop. It takes time to develop data sharing agreements among colleges and universities and the commission. We can do all this, and we have everything in place. We will be tracking students to make sure we know recipients have increased awards. What is their retention like? What is their completion like? What rates do we have for part-time students compared to full-time students? So all of these things become increasingly important as the state makes an even bigger investment, of course. I think the time is right because we have those data sharing agreements in place. We work very closely with the research people in the community college sector, in the Oregon University system. We have been working behind the scenes to build our capacity to be able to administer this program, and we regard measuring the success of the students as part of that. So the effectiveness, what effective we have on enrollment, retention, completion, extremely important. You will be hearing more about this, of course, but this is a summary of what we're putting in place behind the scenes. Then on Thursday, a more complete explanation of the shared responsibility model and the investment that we in the higher education community is asking the state of Oregon to make. I'm pausing, not waiting for a fire alarm or anything, but just in case. And the opportunities for bad puns are just, they're too rich this afternoon.
I would say, people on this committee, if we have questions, we will absolutely ask questions. Ostensibly, there's a lot to cover, so I would say from the Ways and Means perspective, and to the extent you can get into the, you know, meat and the, you know, numbers, and that's what we want to hear, and so go forth, and if we have questions, we'll definitely ask.
Okay, we'll take it away. I would like to be joined, if I may, by one of our staff at the commission, our Director of Scholarship and Access Programs, Vicki Merkel, is joining me here, and I would like to point to the next few pages in your binder, which are presented in much the same way as the detailed information I just presented about the Opportunity Grant. They're referenced. Now, sometimes reference materials can go at the end of a volume or at the beginning. In this case, this isn't an index, but if you want to refer back and forth, or if you think of a question about, I wonder how much impact a particular program has on a campus, we have some information about how many scholarships at various campuses, how we distribute money, and that money can be in the form of private scholarships, it can be in the form of targeted programs, and I'll have Vicki explain that in just a moment. And we'll duel over the, I should have been keeping up with the PowerPoint here. Okay, take it away, Vicki.
Chair Galizio, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Vicki Merkel. I am the Scholarship and Access Programs Director at OSAC in Eugene. I oversee the programs, all of the other programs except the Oregon Opportunity Grant, so I'm going to walk you through those programs right now. Our scholarship program is one that serves more than 340 private and some public financial aid resources. It is unequaled anywhere else in the nation, we like to say. It's very unique. Our only other similar program is located in Vermont, and it's quite different. It is actually one that there are no admin charges received by the entity that oversees the program because it's subsidized by a student loan program that they oversee. So we're very unique. We're very proud in Oregon that over 8,000 students apply each year and more than 3,400 receive private scholarships through OSAC. Those private scholarships, just to clarify, those are funded by individual donors throughout the state of Oregon. OSAC has also a unique unified application which serves Oregon students very well. There's one application, you have it in the back of your notebook, that students can search through and find the scholarships for which they qualify and can apply one time with one set of materials. We also offer workshops throughout the state at colleges and high school campuses to teach students how to search, apply, and compete, but not just for OSAC. We extend that sort of training and those methodologies to other scholarship programs as well. So we are looking at helping these students find the financial aid pieces of their quilt, so to speak, that come from the philanthropic community as well as public resources. We have distributed on average currently about $11 million to more than 3,400 students. That includes, frankly, a lot of a big portion of that is from the Ford Family Foundation. We are the entryway for their students. They disperse their own awards, and the rest of the scholarship dollars come from other individuals through the Oregon Community Foundation, U.S. banks, Wells Fargo Bank, and many other organizations such as Kiwanis, Rotary, individuals, donors throughout Oregon. And again, this private-public model is unique in the nation. We work very, very closely with the Oregon Community Foundation and frankly have usurped their donor development officers as sort of our own fleet of folks out there to represent us throughout the state. We are currently working to enhance our scholarship application. One of the most exciting things for me in working in this field is developing a system that allows students to be recognized for their non-cognitive potential to succeed, to succeed in college, to not only persist but complete a degree. And what I mean is, traditionally we've looked at cognitive variables such as grade point average, test scores, SAT, ACT, and there's a methodology that's been used, actually it's been in the news recently, at Oregon State. They use it for admissions and scholarships, as does the Gates Millennium Scholarship and the Washington Achievers Program. And it's based on William Selisek's work that looks at what does it take to be successful in college. Things like having someone to turn to when you have questions. Are you a person who can navigate through systems? What kind of life history have you had? And so we have attempted through our essays to change our questions so that two students can tell us more of their story, and we're not relying, again, just on test scores and GPA. So we're very excited about that. We also have quite an extensive online application that we encourage students to use. Our paper application that you have a copy of has actually become a marketing tool and a worksheet for students. We distributed 50,000 applications this year, but just like FAFSA filers, most applications are being used, are the e-applications that are being used. We have included this year opportunity for students where they can just put in their essay answers and activities charts.
Excuse me, Ms. Merkel, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But, I see a lot of data here about how many people
applied and how many were awarded and the total amounts of the awards. Does this, for example, looking at the private scholarships, does the amount awarded represent all that was available to be awarded? Were there things that didn't get awarded?
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, we almost like 99.9% are able to award all dollars available. There is a, we believe it's a myth that lots of dollars go untapped in scholarships. That's not what happens in Oregon. We work very closely with our donors to design program rules so that we can locate the students that they're looking for. This is an area of expertise that we've developed at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
So, for example, I'm just pulling one out of the hat here, Western Oregon University. 299 people applied and 88 people were awarded. Is there some reasons why all those people wouldn't, did just too many people apply for the availability of funding?
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, most of our scholarships are need-based. I would describe them as merit within need, where the donor has determined that they're looking for those students who need extra financial aid but also show promise and are a good investment for their dollars. We don't explain to each and every student applicant which scholarships where that need line is for the family. So we have many students who probably apply and don't meet the criteria for the donor. We have other broad-based scholarships that are just merit-only, where students can apply. The situation is we do have more students applying than we have scholarships available, which would lead me to say that's why we have in our policy option package trying to get the staffing to be able to have a system where we can handle more scholarships. I think we're seeing a need here that's unmet and also untapped resources through our philanthropic community and other institutions, such as the banking institutions that do hold trusts for folks who are have decided to leave their funds for scholarships.
If I may interject, Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, if you look at our overall ratio of 8,000 some applicants and 3,400 or so recipients, that's obviously a better ratio than the funds that you pointed out at Western Oregon University. My theory on that, we could test out this hypothesis, but Western Oregon University has a lot of students studying in education-related fields. We have a few scholarships, but not so many, and the competition for those may be higher. Obviously, when you have 80-some recipients out of 210, that's not as good as our overall ratio would be. So that we would have to go back and look at the funds and find out which scholarships are they competing for. That's frequently the case. 3,400 out of 8,000 applicants is an extraordinarily high ratio of recipients to applicants, but not so good on that one campus that you pointed out, Representative Morgan.
Senator, just a quick question. I would believe that some of our OUS universities still have private scholarships that are funded as part of alumni. And do you get some of those, I mean, they can still identify them with the university, transferred to you because it's a more efficient administration of them?
Chair Galizio, Representative, or Senator Devlin, excuse me. In our statute and our authority to administer private scholarships, every scholarship must be available for to be used at two institutions. So we're not available to administer single institution scholarships. That's actually been a real plus for us because we do not compete then for donors for individual institutions.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Jensen.
Thank you. Following a little on Representative Morgan's question and your response to it, I find your question about the amount of dollars that are left laying out there difficult to believe. I do so because I sit on a board of a nonprofit, and that gives scholarships. And last year, we were somewhat surprised or puzzled. We had zero applicants for the scholarship. So if people are searching these scholarships out, this would have been money that would have been relatively easy to for a correct applicant to have come by, and it would have been a fairly generous amount of money for the correct applicant or applicants to come by. So I don't know where I want to go with this, Mr. Chair, but I think I still think there are a lot of small, perhaps, but funds out there that where there is scholarship money available that is going underutilized, and I suppose I'm bothered by that, and I suppose if I put my disbelief aside for a minute, the thing that I would be interested in is then how do you get that kind of utilization? So, and I don't know that I'm looking for a response here, Representative Chairman, as much as I am expressing a concern that I have. And this concern goes back a long, long time. I have, as may be apparent, quite a long history in education, and while I was in education, I was almost always able to find money that was untapped, and it has been a few years ago since, and maybe you've changed that whole arena, I don't know, but so it's a area of concern to me at any rate, but I'd like to go with that.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Johnson, your concerns are the kind of concerns we hear frequently from people who serve on selection committees of scholarships that are administered throughout the state. Every year, they are another reason for including those scholarships in our unified application. When a donor does that, and basically the reason we do it this way is because donors asked the commission to develop this kind of thing, this kind of unified program. When a donor does that, we're considering 8,000 or more students, and this year it will be considerably more than 8,000. We just had a March 1 deadline, and we're flooded with applications. Could very well go much, much higher than that this year. We enter those students into a database, and we match them with the requirements for those small scholarship funds. Some funds are as small as administering or dispersing just a few $1,000s to students in a year. But everything helps. And finding the right students then becomes our challenge. Our database and our computer system lets us do the searches and match the likely recipients with the requirements of that fund. The selections still are made by selection committees, but we give them a pool of applicants that they could not get if they were advertising on their own. From the student's end, they are maximizing their efforts. They're filling out one form and being considered for all these funds. From the donor's efforts, or from their perspective, more candidates, a wider, deeper applicant pool. So it can work, it does work, and we are kind of at the limits right now. That's why we have this in our proposals. The state of Oregon's getting a lot of bang for its buck in this investment right now. We could do even more to help more students to administer even more funds with the support that we're seeking.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what the comment that you just made was the direction that I'm interested in going in. I think that already OSAC does a great job on private scholarships in terms of being out there in the private scholarship market and pulling people into OSAC to use that service to disperse the funds. So where are we missing? Where's the potential here that is going to, and what kinds of returns are we going to get for the person that you're asking us to invest in?
Chuck Delizio, Representative Morgan, the fundamental question, that's what do we get for this investment? Last June, I took a trip with one of our staff down to Lakeview in Paisley, which is quite a ways from almost anywhere in Oregon, to meet with scholarship fund administrators down there. We administer some funds in that part of the state, but this is very, very time-taking work to go out and meet with donors and explain, as I just did in a very surfacey way, the benefits of putting their fund into this pool and having us help them find the best recipients or candidates for their award. What we want to be able to do with this is not use general funds to do that. We want to be able to use the funds that we get from administering these funds to support a donor relations marketing person. We have to have permission to do that as a state agency. We can't just take funds that we can earn from administration of the public or the private funds and use those as we see fit. We are proposing then making this a part of state agency staff, but using the other funds that we get, the funds that we earn, in other words, from administering these funds, to further expand and further help more students.
Well, and quite respectfully, I don't think you answered my question, if I might have a follow-up question. What I'm curious about is, how do you know that there are potential scholarships out there, and how much money are we talking about here? What do you see as the potential payback for this?
Representative Galizia, Chuck Galizia, Representative Warren, we see the potential as quite large right now. Staff have talked about being able to double or triple the number of funds that we administer, which would reach thousands more students if we had that volume of funds. We get regular inquiries from people, from banks, from trust officers, all the time, without even doing any outreach, without even doing any mailings, going out to sit. We don't have anyone to send to meet with these selection committees right now. If we had further investment in this area, we know we can grow it. I can't quantify that, but I can tell you that this is what we've been able to do without staff dedicated to this. The growth in the last year alone was over 47 funds.
So if we were to devise a performance measure for that policy option package that adds that person, we could expect to see a doubling or a tripling in the amount of scholarships that OSAC would offer, private scholarships?
Chuck Alicia, Representative Morgan, a double or tripling would be pretty ambitious, but a substantial increase, yes. We definitely know we could do more. We don't know what the extent of the market is, but we need to do the outreach. We need to do the mailings. We need to contact the attorneys, the trust administrators, the people around the state who could benefit from our service. They're the ones who could benefit by our administration and our expertise. The students, ultimately, the other ones, of course, who would benefit from receiving the funds.
So does there exist a potential performance measure for that POP?
Yes. Chair Commissioner, Representative Morgan, I have Vicki Merkel is looking through right now. Yes, there is a performance measure at the end of this section, and However, I'm not finding it in your binder. We have proposed one in the past.
And if there is one, then I'm sure that as the presentation unfolds, we'll come to it. And I don't mean to derail you. I'm just wanting to make sure that there really is potential to grow private scholarships and what that's going to look like in terms of the return on investment from the perspective of the budgeteers.
Mr. Chair, I think the package you're looking for is the second page from the end of the tab.
The second page from the end of the
tab? A sheet of paper from the end of the tab. Four pages from the end.
There it is.
Performance measure. Representative Jensen, Representative Barnard. Yes, this is package number entitled 104, Scholarship Services. And yes, we do seek to measure. And everything that we propose, of course, we feel strongly should be measurable, should be accountable.
And Chair Galizio, members of the committee, I just want to respond briefly to Representative Jensen. When I referred so strongly to scholarships not going untapped, I get a little passionate because many times we hear companies will come in and they use this line as a way to scam students and to collect fees for scholarship search. So I apologize if I misled you with my message about untapped dollars, but I get very concerned that sometimes that students are told that there's a lot of money out there that goes untapped, and then they're charged a fee for searching. And at OSAC, that's one of the things that we feel is a great public service to our students, to be able to teach them how to search, apply, and compete. And certainly, you know, we have the expertise, and we work with donors at all levels, even those who choose not to be in our application, on how do you find and bring the students to your selection committee.
Yeah, and Ms. Merkel, just for clarification for the committee, Steve Bender wanted to point something out.
Yeah, actually, it was perhaps a question. I know there's been some discussion of having an additional position for scholarship services. Isn't the proposal to have three positions?
Yes.
I'll just do just for the reference.
One of the things that we like to make sure that folks understand is that scholarships are not just for graduating high school students. Many of our donors choose to serve college-level students, both undergraduate and graduate, and this pie chart just shows you the breakdown. This is probably the chart that most helps you see the growth in awardees and dollars in scholarships and applicants. What we don't have on this particular chart, and we'd be happy to bring that to you, is the growth in the number of programs, which reflects perhaps what Representative Morgan was referring to, is how many other donors are left out there untapped. Right now, as I mentioned before, we're relying upon the growth, most of our growth, to come through the Oregon Community Foundation, but we have statute authority to work with other community foundations as well. We've just not tapped into that market. We've also only just tapped into a few of the banking institutions, and we feel that there are markets there, as well as the potential to develop perhaps an online giving program for the individual small donor who would like to just, in memory, for example, donate to a scholarship. And there are some things that we have in mind. One of our largest inhibitors to growing our program, in addition to the staff has been software development, and we actually looked at buying a number of packages, and under Executive Director Johnson's lead, instead are developing a system in-house, which has saved lots and lots of dollars that would have otherwise been spent. With that increased technology and the staff that we're asking, we feel that we can increase our awards substantially for students. In addition to the private scholarships, we do administer a number of targeted programs for students. The Robert Byrd Honor Scholarship is a federal program that awards 15 students from each congressional district. This is a good example of one of our merit-based programs. It is for the top students in the nation who are awarded. It's a very significant honor. The Chafee Education and Training Scholarship, and I'll talk a little bit about that later, but that is for former foster youth. So you're looking at a different set of students who face challenges throughout their life. The National Guard Tuition Program for soldiers, as is the Troops to Teachers, for returning veterans who would like to teach after they're done soldiering. Rural Health Services, bringing professionals to the rural health communities. The Nursing Services Program, helping bring nurses to critical nursing service areas, both geographic and specialties. And Jobs Plus Program for former trainees and the Jobs Plus Program. Just briefly, I'm very excited about increasing access for foster youth. Last session, if you were at some of our public hearings, you may have heard from foster youth who testified and said it's very difficult for them to navigate through the waters of financial aid and admissions for post-secondary education. This is one of the largest underserved populations in the nation, and I think we as a public need to be paying attention to our responsibilities to these students. When we started administering the federal Chafee program, we're actually a subgrantee. The grant goes to the Department of Human Services, and they subgrant to us to administer what we did call the scholarship program. And in all good efforts, all good faith, we set up the program to be very similar to our private scholarship. And we required essays and activities charts, and we want to encourage these students to look for other resources. But what we found is we created some barriers. We required the student to fill out a complete application, even though we didn't look at all the materials, under the guise or the expectation that they would then, you know, compete for other scholarships. But it's a year-round application, so they would miss the boat unless they applied before March 1. Then we had the student, required the student to send us their award letter from the school, and that was a piece that students often missed. And so we felt that we may have been unfortunately losing some students in the process, and the Chafee grant is actually quite substantial. It's a $5,000 award. So we're not calling it a scholarship anymore. We're calling it a grant. To us, that implies something different. In our world, scholarship implies competition. A grant implies that you are, because of your circumstances, then may receive the award. So we're enhancing this, and we hope to see this program continue to be utilized and serve a very significant group of students who need our help.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Troops to Teachers program is one that was funded for the first time for this biennium. There is a federal program, but this was the first time that the state funded it. We have only been able to assist three students so far, and there are a number of reasons for this. A program that started late and getting the word out, and then restricted to only students in public universities. There is no funding for this program to continue at present, but I know that there are some veterans groups that are interested, and as more veterans return from service, we think there will be more candidates. The restriction to only the public sector may be a factor in the future, but we know this is a bill that will attract some interest. This is where we get into the dollars and cents. The policy option packages now, and this is going back and forth. We jumped ahead a little bit to talk about performance measures, but we're talking about using other funds in package 104, substantial. Most of the funding would be from other funds. In other words, the fees that we earn from administering all of these scholarship funds, we would be able to use a portion of those funds to support further expansion. Computer programming that Ms. Merkel talked about, the donor outreach and the marketing that we have also talked about included in this package. the changes to the staffing, and I'll ask Ms. Markle to jump in here and explain that.
I believe the first position is the one that you were probably thinking of a moment ago, which is the donor development and marketing specialist. When OSAC was the guarantor for the student loan business in Oregon, we had several positions that were lost in the downsizing. One was a public information director that was able to help us put together marketing materials in the grants and scholarships division. And now we don't have that kind of specialist, someone who can look at a publication and say, this is what would draw the attention of the market that you're looking for. We also had a staff person, Cheryl Kirchhoff, the former scholarship program manager, who retired about the time as we downsized. And she was very well known in the philanthropic community. This position would help us retrieve some of those skill sets that we don't have on staff any longer. The accounting technician is we have to account for all of the private awards. Every donor account is every donor's scholarship has a separate fund that we have to provide accounting for. We track students throughout their eligibility. They may have a deferment. Sometimes students will transfer to a school that's no longer eligible, and so we have to make a decision on what's happening with those funds. Will they go to an alternate? Do they go back to the donor? We have to provide reporting back to the Oregon Community Foundation or the individual donor. The state SFMS accounting system isn't built or designed to do that, so we do our own in-house accounting. We're also at the time where the Gear Up students are beginning to graduate. The first cohort group graduates the class of 2007. We're very excited about this. We'll begin administering the scholarships that were part of that Oregon University System's Gear Up grant. $1.25 million has been held in trust each of the past 5 years for over $6 million at the Oregon Community Foundation.
Ms. Merkel, I'm going to interrupt you for a second, and we've been having a little mini.
I just lack of confusion.
Yes. So I'm going to ask Mr. Bender if he would explain in terms of the performance measures linking back to the, for example, this package.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Barnhart pointed out the submission that was in your booklet relating to this package. If you go and you go to the Access Programs tab and look two pages before that tab, you'll see a table that's labeled OSAC Package Number and Title 104 Scholarship Services. And if you can't find that, let me know. But if you can find that, this is a table, this is a form that the co-chairs have asked all agencies to include for each package a table of this format to show the impact on performance measures of adopting the package. This is reported by the agency, and if the agency could please correct me if I'm misrepresenting this, but what they are showing in Part A is the percentage growth in the number of privately funded scholarships awarded. That's not the dollar amount, but the number of scholarships. What this table shows is, first of all, the actual growth rates for prior years. The target row shows what they have been proposing as their key performance measure as the targets. So, for example, they have proposed as a target that in 2008 and 9, in each of those years, they achieved 10% growth in the number of privately funded scholarships awarded. The third row indicates the impact of approval of Package 104 of the three additional persons. What the agency is saying is that in 2008, they would then set a target of 10.5% growth in number instead of 10%, and in 2009 for 11% growth in scholarships that year instead of 10%. So the changes are quite modest in the impact, if I'm reading this correctly.
So can I just paraphrase this, make sure I'm getting the picture? So if we were to invest in the staffing changes that adds donor development and marketing specialist, what we could expect to see is in 08 we would see 0.5% increase in the percentage of growth of privately funded scholarships in 2009, a percentage of growth in that number. Is that correct?
That's my understanding of what they are from the report.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the position that we're proposing is half marketing and half donor relations. So we're really looking at a growth of 0.5 FTE for the donor relations part of this, actually expanding the funds. The other part is marketing all of OSAC's programs. When we do the produce the Unified Scholarship Application or the Oregon Opportunities booklet that you see at the back, those are things that we are now doing as a staff. We don't have anyone to assign that to. We don't have anyone to develop materials, to work on our website. We all take that on as our staff responsibilities. So the marketing would be for all of OSAC programs. The donor development, the donor relations, is to work with our partners and to do some of this outreach around the state. Working with our partners, the Oregon Community Foundation has its own outreach staff, and they're doing a lot of this already. We need to have somebody to partner with them, to go out with them and meet with donors. We know there is enormous potential. We're not sure if we're at the point where we could dedicate a full-time person to that right now and make it pay off for the state. But we definitely feel it is worth this half a position, and the other half, again, all funded by other funds or outside funds, not by state general funds here. But the other half would be used for marketing all of our programs to the students in most cases. So we're marketing to donors and to students, but using this position to do that.
So then we would have a half-time position that would actually be dedicated to this number three performance measure. Is that what you were telling me?
Representative Galicia, Representative Morgan, or Chair Galicia, Representative Morgan, yes, that's correct.
But I still don't get this, because you've got between 05 and 06, you actually realized 6% growth in the program, and I don't know whether you added staff there or not. Between 07 and 08 and 09, you project the growth to be 10%. So a good rate of growth, but then when you add that one person, it doesn't appear to make hardly any difference in the outcomes. What am I missing?
Yeah. I think clarification here too, because I think, and I know the co-chairs have asked for this, but I think when we use performance measures and we're trying to judge the performance of an agency, it's one thing. When we're trying to prospectively say, in the future, if you add this, what will the improvement be? I think it's far more speculative, because in this particular area, just looking at your timeline here with a little bit of lag, it looks like money's plentiful. More people donate money. Money is not so plentiful. people don't fund as many, or you actually even lose some. So, I mean, there are other factors involved here. I just don't know how prospectively we can say if you add a half an FTE, this will get you this exact return in this program. I mean, I think they can speculate, but I don't know if there's a science behind this speculation.
Although, I guess my response would be, it seems like this is not unique to this.
No, no.
In other words,
I think it's one thing to have a performance measure for an agency based on different criteria and looking at how an agency is doing and measuring how well the dollars are being spent. It's another thing to say prospectively, if you have one FTE, exactly how much better they will do in that criteria. I don't know if we have the baseline data to actually be able to say what improvement there would be.
Well, they have five years' worth of actuals here.
Yes.
So
but I think the actuals sometimes are more impacted by other factors than, to some degree, than the resources. I mean, if you add the halftime FTE and the economy is really good, maybe they go out and earn 15% per year. If the economy is really bad, there's probably nothing they can do. Well, not nothing, but I mean, it would be much more difficult to secure more people basically funding scholarships privately.
Let me have Mr. McGee, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a little historical perspective on what's happened in this agency in the last few years.
Can you
identify yourself? Just a little historical perspective on what has happened in this agency
for
the last few years. Oh, I'm sorry, Bill McGee, Department of Administrative Services. At the beginning of the 2003-05 biennium, this agency had 84 positions. At that time, it was operating a loan guarantee program that it discontinued at the end of the prior biennium because simply it was no longer economically feasible for it to continue. In this biennium, instead of 84 positions, it has 23 positions. And we, on the governor's side, and you as on the legislative side, were very aggressive last biennium in trying to downsize that agency appropriately and get the right mix of people to do the tasks that needed to get done. I think in some cases we probably went too far in that. And I think some of the things you're going to see in this budget will be attempting to provide them some administrative ability to do things they hadn't done before, such as the marketing type of activities that they've been talking about in the last few minutes. So I think I would agree with Senator Devlin that sometimes the performance measures don't necessarily show all of the things that the positions may add, but I think historically here we're also, in addition to seeing some program growth, we're trying to make up for some choices we made 2 years ago that we may have ratcheted them down a little bit too far.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. McGee. Representative Barnhart, did you?
Yeah, well, I had several points, and I think you just added another one, and I'm not sure whether what I'm thinking is any relationship to reality or not, but I'd like to propose it and ask if it is. One of the things that you said was that as you add a position, you will be able to move, change responsibilities for existing staff. One presumes then that existing staff could use that time more profitably to do the things that the existing staff is specialized in rather than use more general responsibilities like dealing with the website and so forth. So I would expect more productivity from existing staff in those other areas, which of course are not reflected in this benchmark. Am I onto something or have I missed it?
Checking this here, Representative Barnett. Yes, I believe that's true. We have many, many people doing several things at the same time. What you will see also as we move through these policy packages, many of these programs are extremely intricate, especially the public programs. They take a lot of record keeping, specialized records, and specialized communications with potential recipients. A 0.25 FTE can make a huge difference for us because if we get a couple of those put together and pair it with another piece of responsibility, we can have somebody working on similar programs, and you do gain some benefit when one person is doing a similar kind of work with several different programs. We just don't have enough staff right now to gain those efficiencies. We may have somebody working halftime on a program completely unrelated to the other halftime part of that individual's responsibility. So yes, there is that synergy that you gain. We're not at the point yet where we can see much of it.
Representative Barnett, this will be the last point because we're out of time.
But yeah. Okay, and this may be something for a later time, but I'm interested in some of those intricacies. For example, you mentioned the Oregon Community Foundation, and you also mentioned that you do some administration of some of these programs. They, of course, are a custodian for funds and do some of their own administration. Probably not today, but at some point it might be useful for us to understand which part of the administration of those funds you do and what part they do as an example, because I suspect that what you do for them may be also the same kind of thing you might do for Representative Jensen's smaller community-based organization, for example. And I guess a piece of the question is, do you actually control, hold the funds, or do you simply administer the latches that lead the Oregon Community Foundation or some other group to write a check to somebody else? How do you do those kinds of things?
And Representative Warren, can we get an answer tomorrow?
Absolutely. That's why I'm asking it now.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thank you very much. To be continued. So I'm going to close the public hearing on 5044, and we are adjourned.